Good afternoon, Muskegon. You know what time it is. It's September 16, 2022. It's time for Torn Into, your show for news, information, and more for this September 16, 2022. Weather outside, it's 74 degrees, mostly sunny. A beautiful day for football. Go Big Reds, go Tigers. If you are driving, and cannot get a chance to ask questions today, this show will replay on WVS 103.7 The Beat. But if you can get home, or if you are watching, you can watch by going to WVS 103.7 or M106 Facebook site to get questions in. And you're going to want to get your questions in today, because we're talking about critical race theory, and the guest that I have on is one of my favorite, but a little bit about that in a second. Couple announcements. It's National Suicide Prevention Month. I want to say something about this real quick. Look, people, suicide does not discriminate. It doesn't have a face. Every month should be National Suicide Prevention Month. Make sure you keep an eye on your loved ones. And there's no such thing as everybody, or a lot of people have been down this road with thoughts, mental health. We have a mental health crisis. So National Suicide Prevention Month, that should happen every month. It's National Hispanic Heritage Month as well. We need to celebrate our Hispanic heritage, brothers and sisters, instead of Washington and other states using them as pawns. People coming across the lake or coming here for a better life should not be used at pawn or sent to the vice president's house. Martha's Vineyard. Stop playing the games. You know what? Democrats and Republicans, fix the doggone problem and let people be entered in this country with some dignity. Don't get me started. The city of Muskegon right now is currently interviewing candidates right now for city manager as we speak. Also, the city took action Tuesday to celebrate Juneteenth as an official city holiday. Yeah, good for them. And last but not least, absentee ballots are being sent out. You can request them. Go to your city clerk, and if you can't vote in person or you want to vote at home, be an educated voter and vote at home. That way you can discuss and talk. But that November 8th election is so important. And if you think you need to take it off, you have lost your mind. Okay. Melvin, Pastor Melvin's not here today. Brother, take the day off. I'll see you next week. Our guest today, I'm so excited. We haven't had him on for a while. His name is Robert L. Walsh. As his bio is very extensive, we got so much to talk about. I'm just going to bring him in. He can tell you a little bit about his background, and we can get into this thing. Put your hands together for Mr. Robert L. Walsh. How are you doing, sir?
Well, thank you, Gregory, for inviting me on again. I always enjoy it. I'm doing fine. My background is I spent 21 years in the Marine Corps.
Thank you for your service.
Retiring as a lieutenant colonel. Then I went into teaching. And I'm from Vermont. I was teaching in a high school in Vermont. And I was assigned to teach African-American history. They had an elective course there. It was a one-semester course. And I was the typical, I knew nothing about African-American history, quite frankly. So I read Lerone Bennett's book, Before the Mayflower, and made some as a typical teacher, I read the book the night before, made a lesson plan, and went in and taught. I won't say that's a typical teacher, but that was how I had to handle that. And over the next 18 to 20 years, I think I learned more than my students did. But my students really, they were juniors and seniors in high school, and they took it as an elective. We can talk about whether it should be a mandatory course later on, which I'm recommending. Mm-hmm. But the question that was always asked me by the kids, and some of these kids were irate, was why didn't we learn any of this in our U.S. history courses? And I said, well, it's quite simple. It's not in the book. It's not in your history books. I then went on to teach at the University of Vermont. I thought that maybe these kids saying, why haven't we learned this and what have you, was endemic to Vermont because we're a predominantly white state. But at the University of Vermont, teaching race and culture course, I had kids from all over the country. And they asked the same question. Mm. So it made an impression on me that we need to, my belief is, that to eradicate racism is going to take a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But it starts in the schools. And it starts with an accurate presentation of African-American history.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the service, when we wanted to have a guy fire a rifle, we didn't give him a rifle and tell him to go to the rifle range and shoot. What we did is we taught him how to take the rifle apart, its capabilities, its range, its safety instructions, and the whole thing before you ever let them shoot the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying with regard to students and teachers in particular, before you expect them to be able to talk about racism, you got to teach them the African-American experience. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And why do I feel this is so important? I don't think we can address racism unless we understand it. And I think the thing, we have all these people talking about racism and what have you. I find that the reason I think it's important is that African Americans, as a group, are the only group in America, that was brought to America against their will. They were enslaved, denied an education, denied the right to vote, denied economic opportunity, subject to Jim Crow laws. Now, what's surprising is that not enough people understand that the effects of those experiences have lasting effects, and our lasting effects are in effect today. They continue today.
Right, right.
Okay. So we have a real problem here in this country, which I had on the end of my notes. I was going to say that what I'm going to say now. We don't have the problem we have that we face is really a white problem. I said that to a woman the other day, and she looked at me and said, what are you talking about? Well, I feel that we have to educate we don't have to so much educate the black community because they experience this daily. Whites don't.
Mm.
And so we've got to educate us white guys and men and women, so we understand this thing, and then we can address it. I'll give you an example. I wrote a book called Through White Eyes, Color and Racism in Vermont.
Which everybody should read, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I discussed in the last chapter about it's a white problem. But let me tell you what happens with regard to racism. Let's first define it. You know, a lot of people don't know what racism is. And I have two definitions that came from black authors who I really like. And if people haven't read Beverly Tatum's why are all the black kids sitting together in the cafeteria? Mm-hmm. They ought to. She simply describes racism as prejudice plus power.
Wow.
Pretty simple. David Wellman, another author, defines it as a system of advantage based on race. Now, those are two simple definitions which people should be able to understand.
You would think.
You would think, but they don't. People say racism when they throw it around like it's a vanilla ice cream or something, but they just don't understand it.
Robert, why do you think, Mr. Welch, why do you think that is, that something that should be so easy to understand is not?
Well, if you take Tatum's definition, prejudice plus power, people don't want to lose the power.
Please say that again.
People don't want to lose their power. Okay, it's as simple as that. And you can be prejudiced. I can be prejudiced against all kinds of things, but it doesn't. It's the people who are in power. It's the power part that really counts on this thing. And that's where this CRT comes in. And that's why people are so upset with critical race theory.
And that's why one of the reasons why I have you on today. You hear this critical race theory, and it's all over. And some of the things, I was watching an interview of a woman, and she said, "We don't have racism here, and we don't need to teach it here because we don't have racism here." And in a blink of her eye, then she went into every stereotype that she could when she started talking about African Americans.
That's because she's never been educated, okay?
I don't want to be.
Well, you never know. I mean, probably not at this time. That's why you're starting in schools. And that's what's scaring the people who are against CRT. Critical race theory is a theory. It's not being taught in any school other than it's being discussed at the college level. But it's not being taught in any school that, to my knowledge, in the United States. Now, the thing about critical racism, here's a definition of it. It says, U.S. social institutions, criminal justice, education, housing and health and care and labor are laced with racism embedded in the laws and rules and procedures that lead to different outcomes by race. That's a quote right out of the book called The 1619 Project, which discusses the whole critical race theory. Now, when people read that, who don't understand or who have not been had any exposure to African-American experience or education, they say, wow, our systems are all laced with racism? Wow, that can't be, because I never experienced that.
Okay?
But the fact of the matter is, if you've studied African-American history, or if, in the case of African-Americans, if you've lived it, you know that this is true. This is an accurate statement.
Very accurate.
Yeah. But it's being politicized for, and frankly, I'm afraid about this politicization of CRT,
mm-hmm.
because let me give you a couple of examples. We had a gal go before the school board in one of our towns. She's a member of the school board, and she's opposed to CRT, or critical race theory, because she says equity seeks, I'm quoting her now, she says equity seeks to divide people by race, to want the same outcome by each group, often using racial discrimination to get it. Now, how did she come to that conclusion? I have no idea.
I was going to say, I have no idea.
Yeah, second guy is a representative in the state legislature here who went to a, went to his town meeting and says, we don't want to have critical race. I'm opposed to having it teach taught in the school. Don't teach it. He says, and I'm quoting now, he says, racism is an individual problem. We don't have a problem here.
There we go again. We don't have a problem here. Let me go to the board real quick, Mr. Walsh. Benita, how you doing? Says, people lie to others and themselves to keep their ignorance, fear, and hate ongoing. Thank you for your comment.
Well, I'd have to agree with her. Yeah. I read an article in the Boston Globe by Renee Graham. She's an African-American columnist, and she's very good. I read it quite frequently. And she had a thing. She said she was talking about the politicization of making it a political football. Mm-hmm. She says, racists have always understood that they can, I'm quoting here, racists have always understood that they can censor what people learn, that if they can censor what people learn, they can control what people believe.
Wow.
That's exactly what's going on in this country today. Exactly.
Wow. Very true.
So I'm very pleased that people like Renee Graham are writing about this. There's a number of articles I've read that are along the same lines. But what has to happen is that you have to get out there and dispel these crazy ideas that are being put out forward. And the idea is to make people afraid, okay? Make them afraid. Oh, no, I don't want my kid to be. One of the things I hear that up here is that we don't want racism talk because it'll make the white kids feel bad. Okay. I mean, that sounds ludicrous, but it's true. You know,
insane. It's just, okay. You teach about the Civil War, you teach about World War I, World War II, Vietnam, all this kind of stuff. Are we making people feel bad? But yet you don't want to talk about the history of people that were drug over here in boats and chains and all this kind of stuff. You don't want to talk about that because that make the kids feel bad, and that's not history.
Well, it sounds ludicrous than it is, but that's what's being said. See, go to the school boards and say, I don't want my kids subject to this because it'll hurt their feelings. That type of stuff.
Going back
to what we got to do. Pardon?
Let me go back to the board. Benita goes, you talk about the Holocaust. You're right. People talk about the Holocaust, and that's not the German people to make them feel bad. So you used a phrase earlier when we were talking. You used it the other time in our interview about dodging.
Oh, yeah. Let me first, just before I answer that, comment on what you said about the Holocaust. The Holocaust was a terrible thing, yes. And we do teach about it. But it lasted for, what, how many years? 20, 30 years? Slavery lasted for 400 years.
Hello.
Okay. So I see there's a difference there. You know, if I'm not saying one was more important than the other, what I'm saying is you can't put down the African American experience and try and not teach that one and then go ahead and teach the other.
Yeah, right.
It's just not right.
Totally minimize the experience and the plight that we have people went through.
Yeah. Now you're asking about the dodge. In my book, I have a chapter called The Diversity Dodge. And I'll just tell you what happens to me when I give speeches places. particularly when I go and I go to education groups and talk about why it's important to teach African American history and why I want it in the syllabus and why I want teachers to learn it. What will happen to me, I'll get through my speech and some of my presentation and somebody, I'll say, any questions? And the first thing that always comes up is, what about the handicapped? What about the Spanish? What about this, the Mexicans? What about the all these? What about the, you name it, single mothers or what have you? All these diversity things. And, you know, the problems of the handicapped and the problems of the Mexican Americans, the problems of the immigrants. They're serious problems, and they have to be considered, and we should learn about them. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to understand that the difference is, what I said in my earlier remark, is most of those people came here voluntarily and are working their way through, and everybody has problems.
Mm-hmm.
But African Americans didn't. And that's the difference. When the handicapped people have their laws passed to help the handicapped and what have you. For the immigrants, there's immigration laws, there's all kinds of problems, but they're not endemic to that culture. Whereas in the African Americans, they've been deliberately denied the opportunity. I think you talked about earlier about all the stereotypes,
mm-hmm.
they're poor and whatever. Of course, those stereotypes, but that's the end result of the deliberate denying them of the opportunity to advance for over 400 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when people talk about the diversity dodge, it reminds me of when businessmen from the North and South talked during slavery, and they would never use, the Northern businessmen would never use the word slavery in talking about trying to negotiate a contract and not, you know, maybe get a better price or whatever. The Northern businessman would say, well, you know, you don't have the same cost that we have because you have that peculiar institution. So he didn't insult the guy by saying you're a slave owner. I think the same thing's true here when it comes to diversity. It's easier to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion than it is to talk about racism. You know, I feel very strongly about that, that we have to talk about those. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, for me, are euphemisms of quite the same, similar as peculiar institution. That's just my opinion.
Mm. Now, you wrote an article that was published in Vermont on critical race theory.
Right.
How was that received? And talk a little bit about that.
Well, it was received like a dud, like it was a dull thud.
I mean, in other words, you can hear crickets.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up here. I got it in my notes here, and you can see that I really like to come on your show because I've got all this stuff about all these notes here for you that I can pull up. But
that means we just got to have you on more.
We've talked a little bit about what I said in that article where I talked about the school board guy and the school board woman and about the history of, I talked about in here, the history of Jim Crow and World War II racism. I talk about racism companions. Well, we have here, oh yeah, they talk about some examples are the Jim Crow laws, segregation, UVM, eugenics program, Japanese Americans, World War II, racism campaigns, hate and violence, lynchings, and Ku Klux Klan, the United Right to rally in Charlottesville, mm-hmm. the assault on the U.S. Capitol. No question about it. You know, that we hear politicians saying, oh, that that protest down in Washington was no different than the protests of riots, say, in some over George Floyd
or
yeah, and there's a big difference in those things, you know. So I'm getting a little off track here a bit.
You're fine, because the thing is that it really simply is that, going back to the great Dodge, and also not only the great Dodge when it comes to critical race theory, the thing is that it's become this political buzzword that people are using that have no idea, that have no clue, and basically have been nothing but privileged all their life, and need to understand the plight of what we have gone through and still going through.
Oh yeah, so we had, for example, when we've had a number of incidents here. I'm just going to quote one. Recently, we have a woman who's elected to our legislature. She was from the southern part of the state, Bennington, the city of Bennington, and she was up for re-election. She got so harassed by a white supremacist in her town of Bennington that she withdrew her nomination. And she, when I say she was harassed, her children were harassed, her husband was harassed, and this went on for months. And the local police also harassed her. And there's been a study just come out now detailing the failures of the police in trying to protect this woman. And the end result was she's no longer in the legislature. She is still in Vermont, but she moved out of her community.
Wow.
She physically moved. And wow. There's two or three other instances. Well, there's a gal in Rutland who is a head of the NAACP who also moved because of harassment that she got. So this stuff is going on every day. And we as white people have to wake up to it and understand why this is going on, why it's wrong. And I feel so strongly about the fact that that education is a thing. I wrote another commentary for Vermont Digger, who is very good. They'll publish my stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and they're very, very good. And it's a question, let's see if I fit it in with what I've got here, some notes that I jotted down.
Do so, sir.
Pardon?
I said, do so, sir.
I'm sorry, that didn't come. I didn't get that. Maybe it's my hearing is.
No, that's okay. Let me go to the board real quick. Benita has notes. It says exactly. I got to get through this. But it's the policies of the U.S. government. Michael Anthony Smith, what she said from Houston, Texas. I'm trying to get to everything. And I'm giving Mr. Walsh his time. So bear with me here. But it's the bottom of the hour, and what we're talking about is critical race theory and racism and the lack of it being taught in our schools. And that's why we have our friend from Vermont, my brother, who I'm going to see one of these days, because I ain't scared. I ain't running. But I have to commend Mr. Walsh for standing up Mr. Walsh is not our color. He doesn't look like me, but he stands up for what is right, which is a problem that people have to understand that, hey, we go through this every day. Privileged people don't. Let me say that again. Privileged people don't go through what we go through. And so they will say that they don't want their kids to feel bad. Well, what are we supposed to do when our kids go through racism every day? Okay, back to you, Bob.
Okay. I like your comments there. We don't talk about racism because when I'm saying we, I'm talking about predominantly white people here in Vermont. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we don't talk about racism because it's uncomfortable. Okay. And that's where the diversity dodge comes in. One thing that really bothered me, and was just a report that came out in Vermont, is from the executive director of racial equity, an African-American woman, lovely woman. And they have, but she wrote here in her introduction, she says, she's talking about all that this racial equity group has done. She says, sometimes racial justice is intentionally lumped with other equity work to make the racial part more palatable to those who are reluctant to acknowledge the degree in which race is used to influence social and legal policy, and the result need to be race conscious. Why are they doing that? You should be talking about racism.
Right.
Okay. We have, you've gotten me off of my thing on diversity and inclusion and equity. We have 24 organizations sponsored by the state of Vermont, or, you know, being supported by the state of Vermont, to discuss racial equity, inclusion, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Not one of them discusses racism.
Not one.
Not one.
What do they talk about then?
Well,
it's just another meeting.
So I think that, you know, that stuff, it's just all part of this stuff. That I don't know why people won't talk about racism, other than I think it makes them uncomfortable and they feel guilty and they all the rest of that stuff. But they don't need to if they'd study about it, or if they'd learn about it. And I think that here we have to do this in beginning in the education system, whereas the CRT people are saying, don't teach racial history, don't teach CRT in the schools, don't teach an accurate account of American history. I'm saying that's exactly what we should do.
Right.
We should teach African-American history in the schools, period. I wrote this thing called A Question for Vermont Teachers, and I thought it might get somebody's attention. Because I've been trying since 2006, I think, to get the legislature to pass a bill that would require teachers to take a college level three credit course in African American history as a condition of getting their license.
Mm-hmm.
I've put in 7 bills. Then not one of us ever gotten out of the education committee.
Of course not.
So that's why I wrote this thing, a question for teachers about racism. And I give them this following scenario. I'm going to read it to you. Tomorrow morning, this is to the teacher. Tomorrow morning, as you enter your first period class, 2 students have a heated argument about the Black Lives Matter flag flying on the school's flagpole. During your fourth period class, a student uses the N-word. At the end of the day, some parents are waiting for you in your office. They want a promise that you won't teach critical race theory. The next day, a student asks, what is racism? Why is everybody upset about it? My question to the teacher is, how do you handle that? How do you handle each of those situations?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe if they're honest with themselves, they'd say, I don't know how.
Wow. They don't know how. And you brought up something earlier in the conversation is that it's also a power control thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that the power control thing is pretty much right now the far right conservative people trying to afraid they're going to lose their power, and that's why they're causing all this discussion about critical race theory and trying to change the history of the schools and what have you, how it's taught. I think there's also well-meaning people who don't just understand, who just have never been exposed to it, you know.
Oh, you mean the copy and paste people? They copy their opinion from somebody else without thought.
Well, no, well, yeah, that's very true. Yeah, that's right. But you asked about, you know, we were talking about that teacher who doesn't know how to handle a thing.
Right.
It's simply because he doesn't have the information that he needs.
There you go.
Or he or she needs. And what's going to, I used to teach, as you know, and what goes through that teacher mind? Kid says, what's this big fuss about racism? And the guy doesn't know what to do. He hears in the newspaper that if he talks about African-American history, he's going to get sued, you know. Or he hears in the newspaper that maybe his principal saying, well, just do the best you can. Answer it, you know, send the kid to the guidance counselor. That doesn't answer the question. If the guy had taken a course in African, what I do at the end of this thing, I give them a whole list of books to read on their own, which it's all the problem for them. They'd be well educated. But, you know, it's just one of these things that has to be done.
Let me go to the board real quick, Robert, because people are coming in with questions right away. It may be 50 years. This is Mike Anthony Smith from Houston, Texas. In maybe 50 years, the current interracial community may be able to change the narrative. Mr. Smith, I think maybe, but I think the thing is what Bob is saying is that this whole narrative is a lack of education, a control of power, and other things and the thing is that people, if we're going to be a better nation, a better people, we have to understand each other. But the thing is that there's a certain group of people that don't want it. They don't want it. And that's what Bob is saying. Right, Bob?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, if a kid, when I go around and talk to, well, let me put it this way. I think I told you this the last time I was on it. When we wrote our first book called The Other America, The African American Experience, we offered it to schools. I wrote it with Dr. Liam Burrell, who's an African American professor at the University of Vermont. And so we took it and we offered it to schools at cost, and also offered to provide in-service training for teachers on it at no cost. And I sent the letters out to every superintendent in the state, and got zero answers.
Zero.
So zero. So you know, teachers are in an awkward position today, particularly, and I feel sorry for them because they just don't know how to handle this problem, and yet they're being given that responsibility. So I think that the teachers. I thought that the teachers would be jumping at it. Here's an example. I had, at one point, I set up a nonprofit organization, and I forget what I named it, Vermont African American History Project, and I raised $10,000, and I set up a deal with Howard University. There's a nice professor down there who I worked with, And she designed an online course for me that Howard, that the teachers up here could take online and get three credits toward the salary bump. You know, if you're a teacher up here, if you take additional credits, you can increase your salary. Mm-hmm. So I thought this would be very popular. So I went around and I the teachers' conferences and stuff and proposed it. It sent letters out, proposed that they take it. And I got only two or three takers.
And really?
I didn't understand. Yeah, I didn't understand that. Because I would pay for their, all they had to do is take the thing and no cost to them, just to sit in their house and take the course. Mm-hmm. So I finally found out why. Because the administrators in the schools who were taking charge of the credits or who were given credits for salary credits wouldn't give a credit for salary increase to a science teacher. They'd only give it a credit to a social studies teacher.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, so I'd go around and I'd talk to them and I'd say to them things like, where's my notes here? Yeah, I'd say to them, well, that's very interesting. By the way, do you drive a car? I said this to the one superintendent. And he got mad at me, but that's all right. I said, do you drive a car? And he says, yeah. He says, of course. I said, you ever had a ticket for going through a red light? He says, yeah, I guess I have. He says, well, what do you think? That the light system is important? He says, oh, yeah, they're very important. He says, and I said, well, you know who invented the red light? I said, no. I said, Garrett Morgan, African American inventor. He had as many patents as Thomas Edison. The guy's jaw dropped. So I said to him, you know, it'd be good if your science teacher knew that. And if he took this course, he might know it.
Right.
So I think that not only should we teach a semester course, a formal course. One of the reasons I want teachers to have to take courses in African American history is so they can answer questions like that in science class, in music class, or in any class that really they have.
Right.
Mathematics. I asked a mathematics teacher, well, what do you think of Benjamin Banneker? He says, who's that? I said, that's an African-American mathematician whose statue is in Baltimore, who helped design, lay out the District of Columbia. And he says, oh.
Yeah.
I said, maybe you ought to read up about him and learn about African-American achievements in science and things.
Right.
And other things.
Right. So let me go to the board, Robert. Back to Houston Texans, Michael Anthony Smith. He said, white society will not permit the discussion. Your thoughts?
Oh, I don't think that's true. I can understand where the questioner is coming from, but if people like myself, and there are a number of them, I'm not alone. I'm finding that there are a lot of people who are supporting this, but you have to get out and speak in public.
Right.
Now, I'm 89 years old, so it doesn't make any difference at this point. But you know, there's all kinds of reasons why people are reluctant to speak out, but more people are, and I think it will come. At least I hope it will come.
I think Robert, it has, we're at a point where it has to come out. It can't be a political dog whistle, where people are just using CRT to scare people. And now we find African Americans going against it as a dog whistle, political dog whistle to scare people. And my thing is, I don't get it. Just like you were using historical things of inventions made by African Americans and people not knowing that. It's history is history. And it can't be whoever is in charge writes the history books and leave out what they want. Now you're talking about trying to even take out more out of the history books that are not even there. And so something has to be done or we're in trouble. And it just can't be two or three people.
No, it has to be. It has. You're absolutely right. But, you know, it all starts with two or three people speaking out and letting it go. You know, I'm finding an interesting thing. That book I wrote on Through White Eyes was published in 2006. And I think I've given away more copies than I've sold. but what I'm finding now is it's getting more popular. People are beginning to ask me, can I have a copy of that book? What have you? So
no, they need to buy a copy of that book.
They need to buy a copy. Yeah, but you know, I think people are becoming more aware. I'd say people. When I'm talking about people, I'm talking about people in the white community are becoming more aware of the need for this information. Mm-hmm. Why I can't get it in the education system, I don't know. But I'm really frustrated about that, and we're continuing to work on that.
Yeah, I want to go back to your article where you talked about, you know, we talked about black kids sitting together in the cafeteria defines racism as prejudice plus power, but then you took it and said the Declaration of Independence idea that all men are created equal, but compromised as the founding fathers drafted the Constitution. And you went in to talk about that. And then you went in 69 years later, you talk about the Dred Scott case. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
About the case itself?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Dred Scott was brought into a free state, and his master brought him into a free state, and he petitioned the Supreme Court, the courts, and it got up to the Supreme Court to say that when he was in a free state, he was a free man, and the court said, "No, the Supreme Court made the decision that no." He was the property of his owner, and they equated it was if they took his. I think the Supreme Court justice who wrote the decision used this term. I can't be sure, but I think he used the example of when the owner brought his horse into the state, the horse wasn't free. So when he brought Dred Scott into the state, Dred Scott wasn't free. They were both property.
Wow. Okay. Wow. And so those examples of what you just said about Dred Scott, those things are not written in history books.
Well, no, they're not. Well, they're alluded to, okay? I won't say they're not in textbooks. But they're not emphasized.
Right. Okay. Wow. Say that again, Robert.
But I won't say that they're not in textbooks, but they're not emphasized or given in any depth.
Hello. That's very good. It's not given any depth.
Yeah.
Not looked into. No teeth.
Fun.
I said it's no teeth. It's no nothing teeth. Behind.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. But you can't to understand that. I had a example when I was stationed in London. I had a lot of friends with the Royal Marine officers, And several of them were on my case all the time because I was a Yank, and therefore I was prejudiced toward blacks. And maybe in those days I was. I don't know, because I hadn't come full circle on that yet. I just was accepting stereotypes the way I was taught. But I knew that it was wrong, and it made me feel very uncomfortable. Then the British changed their laws and allowed immigrants to come in from Africa, from their former colonies. And that's when that's when race riots started in the cities of, started in London and Donahue Gate and other places, because it was economic. These people were taking the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the immigrants were taking the jobs. You had classic change of now all of a sudden discrimination against immigrants, all of whom were black, you know, and it's so much of racism is tied to economics.
Wow. Hold on just a second. Let me go to the board here. Hey, Paul Allen Billings, he said, thanks to Janie Brooks for teaching this at college level. Hashtag African American history. Thank you, PA. That's a local teacher that is a fist pounder with teaching African American history, like yourself.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that.
Robert, it's 2:52. We have like possibly 8 minutes, and man, I'm gonna get you on because there is so much stuff that is screwed, but. What's a few things that we could do to change this around?
Well, let me tell you one quick thing, and I'm gonna take credit for it. My high school was known as the Rebels. They in 1961, South Burlington High School broke away South Burlington broke away from Burlington, and created their own high school. And since they broke away and they were South Burlington, they decided that their name, they would decide they were the Rebels because they broke away from this institution.
Mm-hmm.
And they adopted the rebel flag, the Confederate flag, as their symbol. And the nickname was the Rebels. And that went on for years. And the football games played Dixie and this is up in Vermont, when the football team would go on the thing. Captain Rebel would run out with the Confederate flag and they played Dixie and all the rest of that crap.
Oh my gosh.
During my years teaching African American history, I used to encourage my students to initiate petitions to change the name.
Mm-hmm.
And it never got anywhere. When Dylan, what's his name, down there in South Carolina, went into the black church and killed the 9 or 10 parishioners,
mm-hmm.
I went to the school board and said, this has gone on long enough. You have to get rid of that Confederate flag and change the name of the school's nickname. That opened up a 2-year argument, more than 2 years, which... Finally, they did change the name, okay? And the nickname now is Wolves instead of Rebels. The beauty of what happened in that thing was it exposed the racism in our town. It brought all the races out, signs and all kinds of stuff. Now, when I left one of those school board meetings, and I've been in a number of situations, I've been in combat and what have you, I walked out in that parking lot and I thought I was going to be assaulted by the whole group. And it was quite an experience. Since then, we've had a number of instances where in our town of South Burlington, where teachers of black members of the staff have been harassed, students have been harassed and what have you. So I feel very strongly that the time has come when change is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that, and I you know, you pick up the papers to the on the news today, you hear some of the pronouncements from the senator from Kentucky or some of these senators, you know, and I think people are getting to the point now, when I say people, I mean all people, all races, where they're saying it's time to change. And I'm very hopeful that it will happen. And I think it's not going to happen overnight, but it is going to happen.
I do think that there is a group of people out there that, like yourself, that sincerely want change, but because of the political environment of like using CRT and different groups and stuff like that, that the hate numbers are going up, and like you said, the lack of education and stuff like that, it's going to take the village of everybody and a lot of people that look like you, Bob, to get up and say enough is enough. Even the smallest thing, when that Facebook joke that's off color comes to you and that person says, no, that is incorrect. We have to start somewhere.
Well, my answer to that is that, and my response would be, I agree 100%. It's going to take a long time. What I found when I taught my Black History class, when it came time for final exams, I didn't give them one. And they were shocked. They came in. I didn't tell them I was going to do this. They came into the classroom and they looked for their exam papers. And I said, they said, where's our exam? I said, you don't have one. I said, it's written on the board. And what I had on the board was that when you leave this class and you're in a cocktail party or someplace and they tells an N-word joke, speak up and say that's wrong.
That's right.
And you're doing your job. You know, when I came under attack on the social media for trying to get rid of the rebel name, a number of my former students came to my defense.
Nice.
You know, some guys all over the country wrote in, got on to social media and defended me. That was encouraging. And I think that that's what's going to happen. It's not going to happen in my lifetime, and may not happen in yours, a young guy like you, you know. it may not happen in your lifetime, but it's going to happen. And it's going to be awkward.
Well, let's hope that you and I do enough screaming that something will be done in this political time. We have to realize things like CRT and all that kind of stuff. When people bring up, they're against it, realize what they're really saying, people. Really look at what people are saying, because a lot of stuff that people are saying is just racist. Mr. Robert Walsh, I have to have you on again.
Okay. I'd love to.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is by Lieutenant. I'm going to salute him. My brother from Vermont. His book, go out and buy it. Racism Through White Eyes or Blue Eyes. I just go out and buy it, because it is a great book. And the thing is, like you said, it takes one step at a time, like you said, on that chalkboard. When you see something inappropriate, stand up and say, that is wrong. And with that, thank you, sir. Listen, it's 3:00. That's the end of the show. Go out and do something. Go sow a seed in somebody's life. Make a positive change. Let's end this racism, and it starts with you. Take care, and God bless. Mr. Walsh, take care.
Thank you very much.